Patrick Chotanis is the author of a fascinating new book. It's called The Market Mind Hypothesis, Understanding Markets and Minds Through Cognitive Economics. And you can also find out more about all of his research and work by going to marketmind.org. Patrick, thank you for joining us on the show again.
Happy to be here, Chris, and thanks for inviting me.
So, Patrick, we've explored the market mind hypothesis with you a number of times, but this is the book now that you've released, which synthesizes all your views into one place. It's very fascinating. And as written in the subtitle, cognitive economics features prominently in it. Let's start off exploring the difference between the market mind hypothesis and the dominant or mainstream economic theory of today, because I think this is an important part and theme of your book in terms of the major contrast between what you're presenting and how most economists think about how the economy and the financial markets function.
Yes, that is an important context. And there are two points I think I want to make. The first one is theoretical, and that concerns the flawed worldview of mainstream economics, which in my book I define as partnering of the strange bedfellows of neoclassical, or rather new classical economics and New Keynesian economics. And that worldview is a mechanical worldview. And I have a number of quotes in my book, but one of the more prominent ones is from Robert Lucas, one of the founders of New Classical Economics, where he states that economics is something that you can put on a computer and run, and that approach allows modeling and mechanical approach to economics, including treating humans as robots. So in short, that worldview considers the economy to be a machine, the market an automaton, and the conscious humans in it to be robots. So in other words, at all levels, there is no consciousness. The second reason, before I go into cognitive economics, the second point here is more empirical. And that is that I think all the economic crisis that we've seen over the past decades, arguably starting with Black Monday in 1987, where a mechanical investment strategy called portfolio insurance contributed to the crash. And then, of course, we had the collapse of LTCM roughly 10 years later, and then the GFC, the global financial crisis, and then the repo collapse just before the COVID crisis. And in the UK, more recently, the LDI crisis. All of them were characterized by dangerous tail wagging the dog, whereby the causes were certain mechanical approaches, either in investment strategies or regulations or risk management strategies. So that is where the flaw starts. Now, very briefly, cognitive economics offers a different paradigm, an alternative paradigm. The MMH is a so-called post-cognitivist interpretation of cognitive economics, but basically cognitive economics is a partnering of cognitive science and economics. And that tells you that cognitive science, as a multidisciplinary field that studies all aspects of the mind, that it can help us to formalize, and this is a simple interpretation of the MMH, what investors have always casually referred to as the market's mind. So you switch from a mechanical worldview to an organic cognitive worldview of economics and consider a mind at all levels, the individual, but also collective level.
I like how you drew that contrast between the mechanistic versus the organic. And as you noted, the mainstream economic model of today is largely mechanistic and model driven in nature. It's such that, you know, you could run it on a computer. And like you said, economic actors, individuals, businesses, et cetera, they're seen as, you know, homo economicus, self-interested parties that are acting based on certain stimulus. And, you know, they're essentially looked at as in a very simplistic or linear way. But you write in your book that MMH, the market mind hypothesis, we'll just refer to it as MMH going forward, it explores the reality of all that price reflects. And that includes the full richness of human mentality underlying all economic activity. Why is it important to move away from this largely mechanistic and model-driven paradigm to one that is more organic and that includes the full range of the human experience in terms of understanding the economy. Why is this such an important shift?
That last sentence captures a very important term, namely the lived experience. What it is like for, in the real economy, for example, consumers and producers to participate in that economy. But for your listeners in particular, for investors, what it is like to be in a market, what it is like to undergo the market mood of despair or the market mood of exuberance. That colors everything that we do, all the decisions. And the problem with mainstream economics is, as you know, it was inspired with what is called physics envy. And George Soros and Philip Mirovsky and Andrew Lowe and others have written about this. It wanted to follow the natural sciences, in specifically physics. But as Frank Knight and in a way Friedrich Hayek almost a century ago highlighted, we're dealing with conscious entities. And in cognitive science, consciousness is now at the forefront of a lot of research. And we're starting to understand it much better. And by understanding it much better, we also realize how crucial it is. So in short, the answer to your question is that all our mentality, and that includes the rationality of neoclassical, but it also includes the biases or the heuristics of behavioral economics, there is an overlay there. And that is our consciousness with which we experience in a qualitative way what it is to be in the market with skin in the game as investors, for example. And as Howard Marks always says, where you can feel the temperature, which basically is all about mood. And it is that element that is ignored, and that is why we miss out on when these crises happen. The late Queen in the UK famously stated, why did nobody see it coming? And this is all part of it.
One of the concepts that you express in your book that I find interesting, which we touched on already, is this idea known as experiential valuation. Would you mind explaining that a little bit for us?
Yes. So the MMH submits the market mind principle, which has two legs. The market as mind, which covers most of the book, and that is most relevant for economics, but it also covers mind as market, which is much more towards cognitive science. And here I make the point that cognitive scientists also, in their rhetoric, in their language, in their terminology, casually almost refer as if the mind, or rather the mind-body, is an economy in itself. And I describe that in the book. So you get to a kind of convergence where you suddenly realize that valuation as a very broad concept is central to the economy as a collective manifestation of us, but also at the individual basis we do valuation. And some of it is, say, unconscious. But towards that valuation, there is this discovery, right? In markets, we talk about price discovery. And in the larger economy, we talk about innovation and discovery of new products and services. But at the individual level, all this culminates initially in an individual, be it a scientist or some entrepreneur who has some discovery. And I emphasize that the phenomenology of that discovery, namely the aha experience in the eureka moment, this qualitative essence of suddenly having this insight and this new knowledge, that is the experiential valuation of whatever object you're focusing your attention, and in other words, what your consciousness is occupied with. So it is this experience of a valuation where you suddenly realize a meaning or what it is worth, that adds the aspect that is completely overlooked in any homo economicus sense, in rationality, etc.
So when I was reading your book, one of the things that came up in terms of this contrast is, you know, the mainstream economic paradigm is largely, again, model-driven, mechanistic in nature. You are proposing one that's much more holistic and organic in nature, which incorporates the full richness of all human experience. And the one thing that I kept coming back to is when a crisis hits, you really can't use the same modeling or the same thinking before a crisis as after the crisis, because there's such an impact on human behavior, on human consciousness collectively. And that's where really the mainstream economic modeling and theory really falls short, is in understanding the process by which human experience changes from moment to moment, especially pre-crisis and post-crisis, and how you need to respond differently given the change in human behavior.
You hit the nail on the head, and it also highlights the challenge that we face, because in a way, we need new methods and new tools to do this type of research. And therefore, we need the help of cognitive science and cognitive scientists. Of course, we understand, not as an excuse, but as an explanation, why mainstream economics doesn't want to touch it, because their way of modeling, their way of mathematizing economic system at all its levels doesn't allow for this. And it is the angle of the 4E cognition, which you and I also talked about previously, right? 4E cognition is very important, backing the MMH and informing the MMH. And for your listeners, 4E cognition considers the mind to be embodied, embedded, and active and extended. And it follows from a more broader move away from considering the mind as some mechanical brain-bound organ like a computer with some hardware and software, to that of a complex adaptive system that is in a 4E setting. And crucially here, mainstream economics, because it has this physics envy background, it views the economy in that mechanical worldview where there is objectivism, positivism, and reductionism, right? And famously, one of the seminal papers for 4E cognition was written by philosophers Andy Clark and David Chalmers. And they start that paper with the now famous question, where does the mind stop and the rest of the world begin? So coming back to the objectivism, positivism, and reductionism, which has as a common denominator a cutoff, they ask, where is the cutoff? The moment you have conscious human minds involved, there is no cutoff, and that is central in 4E cognition.
Patrick, let's talk about where the MMH fits into central planning.
Well, it is very critical of central planning, and one of the inspirations for that is, for example, Adam Smith. Most economists know Adam Smith from The Wealth of Nations, but he wrote a much more important book, which many say he preferred, and that was The Theory of Moral Sentiments. And in that, he talks about men of system, which is his reference to central planners. And in terms of libertarianism, the MMH has a lot of sympathy with libertarianism. So this is basically the Austrian school of economics, as you know. But we don't necessarily need the politics of libertarianism. We can use the arguments of cognitive science to make the case of free minds and free choice. And central in all of that is also the insight from cognitive science that there is no homunculus in the human mind, right? There is no central executive in the human mind. And therefore, by extension, I argue that there is no need for a central auctioneer or a central planner in markets. So this idea of no homunculus extends, and that again is the arguments for that is given by 4E cognition. So that has all kinds of implications for policies, central planning and central bank policies, but also regulations. And if you want to view it from an extreme point of view, that the market mind in a way is a collective entity of us, then any manipulation of it should be judged in that way and punished if it is badly affecting the market. So the implications are enormous.
Let's talk about how you view the market more broadly. Benjamin Graham has referred to the market as Mr. Market, having its own thoughts and feelings and behavior. Do you view the market in that same way?
Well, we need to be careful anthropomorphizing here, but I wanted to contrast Benjamin Graham's Mr. Market with the way that the MMH sees it, because Benjamin Graham also said that the market is a voting and a weighing machine, right? We need to get away from the machine. And Mr. Market is generally viewed in Graham's terms as schizophrenic, right? Sometimes very bullish, sometimes next day very bearish, etc. But it is more complicated than that. And coming back to what we just discussed also in terms of central planning versus free market and laissez-faire, I make the argument that criticizing free markets as part of the problem is a straw man, because markets have never been free. They have always been manipulated. And the problem, of course, as we all know over the last decades, particularly by the interference by central banks, is that there is a lot of manipulation. So Mr. Market is a collective extended entity, coming back to your question, but in a 4E cognition sense. And it, in a way, then it contrasts with the Benjamin Graham original interpretation.
And along those lines, you even write here, I find this fascinating, this idea that when the financial system physically freezes up, you know, if we were to see a major crisis, or if even the stock exchanges were to be closed, for example, that we need to think of this as almost like a person going into a coma, right? Or a vegetative state, like the pricing, the activity that is taking place in the financial market, that this is akin to the neural activity that's taking place in a person's brain on a collective level. And so this obviously serves a primary purpose in intervening into those price signals, into that activity, is in a sense manipulating or altering that, just as if we were to imagine, you know, someone in going into a person's brain and shutting it down or manipulating with a person's brain as well. So, I mean, some of the analogies you draw here are quite fascinating.
Yeah, and they are very important, Chris, that you mean it in the sense of actually causing some of these freezing up. Afterwards, trying to restore the health, that's different from what you're talking about. This interfering and this manipulation can be causal. And that's where part of the problem is. That's very important for your listeners to understand that we're talking about that.
Yeah, that's right. It goes both ways, right? So the lead up to a crisis, the seeds of those can be found in central banking policies, for example, massive money printing, shutting down of the economy, much of what we saw in the last crisis, COVID. So along those lines, as we close, what would MMH say about what we experienced in 2020 and kind of what has happened since?
As you know, as I explained in the book, I make a distinction within the economic system of the two elements. So you have the real physical economy and then the psychological financial economy. In other words, the economy and the market. Those are the two elements that form the economic system. So first, on the real economy, that was exemplary what happened there for the mechanical approach and ignoring the medical requirement or need for it. But basically what happened, right, is to treat the economy as a machine and just shut it off, as if you're pulling a handle or you turn a knob and the economy is off. And then after a while, you think, well, I just pull the lever up again or turn a knob and it will turn on again. And obviously, it doesn't work that way.
Well, again, the name of the book is The Market Mind Hypothesis, Understanding Markets and Minds Through Cognitive Economics. Fascinating read. Highly recommend it. It's available on Amazon, or you can also get access to it at marketmind.org. Patrick, always a pleasure to have you on our show to discuss how things are proceeding with the MMH. I wish you continued success. And I know that you have a number of symposiums and other events that are continually taking place at marketmind.org. Anything upcoming that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, we have an inaugural guest lecture by a well-known economist, Deirdre McCloskey, that is in December. And that is part of our celebration of the tercentenary of Adam Smith, which is this year. And when you follow our website, there will be many other events in the coming years.
Perfect. And once again, that's marketmind.org. Patrick, pleasure speaking with you on our show. We definitely look forward to having you on again in the future. If you have any questions or feedback on what we discussed today, or if you'd like to get in touch with us at Financial Sense Wealth Management, feel free to check out our new website, financialsensewealth.com, or you can give us a call at 888-486-3939. For FS Insider, I'm Chris Sheridan. Thanks for listening.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.